Okay, I'd like to convene the Ways and Means Committee meeting. And Representative Wagenius, I think you've had a chance to study the minutes. Am I correct?
I know the minutes are correct.
Would you like to make a motion?
I would certainly do that. I will move the minutes of
April 3rd would be the day.
Thank you.
Okay, the Representative Wagenius moves the approval of the minutes for April 3rd, 2014. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carried. The first bill we have up is House File 1951. Representative Murphy is the chief author, but I understand Representative Nelson will be pinch hitting for Representative Murphy. So the chair moves that House File 1951, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. There is
an author's amendment.
Do you want to do the amendments before you explain the bill, Representative Nelson?
I'll do the author's amendment, like the author's amendment, which is the 18A amendment, H-1951-18A. That's just a technical amendment, changing some dates and correcting on 213 or 212, correcting the statute, if it's in there. It's basically a technical amendment.
Okay, so the I will move the 18A amendment, and if you could entertain any questions, technical, seeing none.
It's technical, it's just changing dates and correcting date changes that were missed.
Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. There is another amendment, the A1 amendment. Yeah. This is the DHS amendment. Are you familiar with that one?
No, I'm not.
Anybody that's familiar with it?
It's just striking.
This was requested by DHS. Is somebody
DHS
here from DHS that can explain the amendment?
He can explain that. I'm not aware of it because I was asked to pitch in for Mary. I wasn't aware of the two amendments.
It meant the timeline. We got an email from DHS on it, and so if you could identify yourself, sir, for the record, and then maybe explain the need for the amendment.
Yes, good morning. My name is Jim Yates. I'm the Assistant HR Director for the Minnesota Department of Human Services. This is a technical amendment, and it simply is needed to correct the job title for licensed practical nurse. Previously, the job classification title had the number 1 at the end of it. That 1 has been removed, so the SERP statute needs to be amended to strike the number 1.
Okay, any discussion? When you mention it, I think I remember the it reduces the number of classifications, and am I correct in that?
Correct.
Okay. Any discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by...
Mm-hmm.
Did I move the amendment? Yeah, I did move the... All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. We now have the A-16 amendment. Representative Kahn?
Yes. So, Chairman, I'll move the amendment.
Okay, Representative Kahn moves the A-16 amendment. Representative Kahn, if you'd explain the amendment.
Yes, this amendment asks the three major pension funds to provide the legislature with a report on the effect of the phased early retirement options. Some of you guys may remember that, because each of the three big pension plans were allowed to institute PERO programs. And these programs allow somebody, usually over age 62, to retire and collect a pension and have an agreement to work up to half time and get paid from their employer. The reason usually given is that the employee has particular expertise that we don't want to use and is valuable to the employer. This all sounds very good. And in the current bill is an extension of the PERO program for PERA, for 8 years until 2022. But the problem is, I don't think we've looked critically at the program when we approved it. And this is one of the things, this use of early retirement was one of the things that just absolutely killed the MRF pension plan, which we're still paying to bail out. But the plans in the pension groups pushed the early retirement programs because they sounded very good at the time. We'll let someone retire and we hire someone new for a lower salary. It's win-win. Did we think so? But we wound up paying people longer because they retired earlier. And the payment, so it's a win for the system and a loss for the pension plan. The system gets the profit with the pension plan paying the difference. But so maybe it's okay. Maybe it's all right. But the problem is we don't know. We put it in and we don't know the facts. And that's all this amendment is asking for, is the facts. So everybody likes this, but what effect does it have? Employees like it, the cities and the counties and everyone likes it, but what effect does it have on the pensions themselves? And as I said, this was one of the things that did in the MRF plan with a bunch of early retirees. It was good for the city, but bad for the MRF. And all of a sudden, the MRF account had this big increase in benefits. We ended up picking that up on the state level because it was so the city and the state together founded the MRF plan. So what's happening with this plan? The answer is we don't know. The state has 50 people who use it. PERA has 430 people in it. TRA has 5,000 people. And maybe they make jobs of it less, that these jobs may make jobs less available for younger people. And maybe it prevents the pension funds from having more paying members. And we're learning about how hard it is for young people to have good career jobs. And maybe this is one of the things that's staying in the way. So, okay, I'm getting signs there. But when we did this for St. Paul teachers, we made the St. Paul school district make a contribution to pay to the pension fund to pay for the extra costs. So we're not doing anything like that here. We're just asking to study it, so we'll come back next year understanding what the effect is on the pension plans. And we got one of the usual things, well, don't tell us in law to study it, we'll do it ourselves. You know, I'm just more comfortable telling them to do it, because they've had plenty of time to do it themselves and they haven't.
Okay, Ms. Vanek, would you identify yourself for the record and who you represent and give us your thoughts on the amendment?
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mary Vanek. I'm the executive director of PERA. I'm asking that you not support.
Excuse me for a moment. I think we're having a problem. The mics must be. Okay. The previous testifier was a little hard to hear as well, so there's something. It may be my distance, but at any rate, if you could start again. Thank you.
Again, my name is Mary Vanek. I'm the executive director of PERA. I ask that you not support this amendment in the way that it's written. I respect Representative Kahn's interest in understanding this. I can give you some background. Before the board authorized staff to bring this to the legislature in 2009, we did an analysis of the age at which our members retire. At the time, it was under age 62, and the actuary said that by making this program available and knowing that under IRS rules we can't allow someone to collect a pension and earn a salary without a break in service, that this will push people to work beyond what was our average retirement age. And that is in fact what we are now experiencing, a positive impact by people working longer and not retiring to collect their pension before age 62. We did a study for the board, and I'd be happy to make that available. Before we asked the board whether or not they wanted to not allow this program to continue, which it's set to sunset this year, July 1st, set another sunset date or make it permanent. And because the actuary indicated that we had not had enough use to do a valuable informative study on any impact to the plan, the board asked that it be continued again for a sunset date 5 years out, but the longer date is associated with anybody who enters an agreement in the last year. It still can extend out for 5 years. They can an individual can participate in this program at the approval of the employer for up to a total of 5 years. Our experience shows that since it was implemented, there are only 4 individuals who have continued in the program since 2009. There are another 17 who've had renewals who are currently participating in the program since 2010. There are about 250 participants, 27% of them come from Hennepin County. 87% of the counties that are using this, or the employers that are using this program, are in greater Minnesota, where they have difficulty getting replacement workers for social work and for nursing and some computer analysts and programmers. And that's where we see it being used quite a bit. The average age, as I mentioned, is above 62. 57% of the participants in the past were ages 62 through 64. 43% of them ranged in ages from 65 through 77. Now, you need to understand that if these individuals weren't in the phased retirement program, they could be rehired as reemployed retirees and have no earnings limitation whatsoever. In the phased retirement program, they can't work more than a 50% full-time equivalent to participate in this program. If they were reemployed retirees over the age of 65, they could come back and earn anything. I appreciate what Representative Kahn is interested in. I would like to let her know that the board has directed that staff come back with a suggestion, a recommendation on how we deal with reemployed retirees, and that would bring this group in if we, in fact, find that having the employer at least make an employer contribution on the earnings of these folks who are already drawing would benefit the fund. Right now, we simply don't have enough data to make a meaningful to arrive at a meaningful conclusion. We are, however, I have a staff person right now running a report with the individuals who are in the phased retirement program, what their pension is, what their salary was at the time of retirement, and what they are earning now. And I have every intention of making that available to the LCPR. But going beyond with the mean, median, average, it doesn't really provide any meaningful information because of the low utilization of this program at this point in time.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Well, first of all, if you listen to the last statement that Ms. Vanek made, she was really speaking in support. She said, we need to have the information, we need to look at it. It's really good that the plan is looking at it, but the legislature makes the decision. And the Pension Commission is the one who needs the information on it. And PERA is not the problem. PERA has 430 at most, according to our info, in it. TRA has 5,000. That's one of the places where we need to look at the issues. And frankly, I think the bottom line before this committee at this point is, if you believe in fact-based decisions, you should support this study. Next year, the LCPR starts all over from scratch, and it seems to me to be a good way to give them some fact-based information to make their decision to make their decision on. And, you know, if there are... This will go through the process if there are words, if we should get mean, median, et cetera, if those should be changed. Just tell us how that should be changed. Tell us how the words of the study should be changed, and we'll go ahead and do it. But if you're persuaded by anecdotal statements and seemingly plausible arguments, then just vote against this amendment. If you want data to support the decisions we're making, vote for it.
You got to identify yourself.
Luther Thompson, representing TRA. I don't think TRA is the problem here because we don't have a phased retirement program, but we have, as Representative Kahn suggested, about 5,000 members who have retired and gone back to work. Primarily, these are substitute teachers working on a part-time basis. So TRA does not have a phased retirement program. There is a phased retirement program for MNSCU teachers, And those Minsky teachers that are covered by TRA in the phased retirement program are about, I think it's six. So we would support the comments made by Tara as well.
Why don't we hear first, Representative Kahn, from the, it looks like okay. Pension plans are wanting
not,
to,
do not
to comment on their
want
position.
To do extra work.
You could also identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Dave Bergstrom, and I'm the director of the State Retirement System. We are fine with providing information. We think this goes to be a little bit too much. We have 50 people on the plan, so to me it's much ado about nothing. Quite frankly, this did not go through the Pension Commission. I think it would be good to get other ideas from the Pension Commission members to see what they like to study, rather than going through this exercise, which is going to require a lot of manual work, go to the Pension Commission and say, well, boy, I wish we had this and we had that. So, Mr. Chair, I want to make it clear we're very happy to cooperate. We'd like some input into the process. I think the rest of the Pension Commission would benefit from input. And as I stated earlier, we have 50 people. I'll tell you just anecdotally how we used it. We had a computer person retire. We brought him back on a part-time basis just to help coach the rest of our computer staff. So it's been a good program. We'll provide information. I just think the study goes a little too far.
Okay, is there anyone else that is going to comment? Okay, Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, you know, if there's some work, first of all, I did bring it before the Pension Committee in a much stronger form, and I didn't admit I didn't do a good enough job there. So I kept working and thinking about it, and this is the data that the Pension Commission will need to make the decision. And if there is some wording that needs to be changed in this, well, we're going through the process and we'll figure it out to make it less onerous somehow. It seems to me that I would want this kind of information before I made a decision. And remember, for all we and I totally understand the importance of, you know, more so after this weekend, of keeping the expertise of older people in the system. But the but the point is, this is also a way to stop younger people from getting in too. And these are some of the people we're worried about getting on a career path. And it's not a prohibition. It just gets us the data to make an informed decision instead of going through this argument again next year for the Pension Commission. So.
Okay. Any discussion on the amendment? Mr. And by the way, Representative Murphy is now here if you want to join us at the table, or we just got started and you've now arrived as the chief author.
And my understanding is that Representative Murphy doesn't care, but like I said, the pension plans have offered to look at this and give their information, and they're asking not that it not be put on. It's that they'll do it without the amendment again. And Representative Kahn says that, well, if you want to do it, should do it. So I guess that's where we're at.
Okay, any discussion? Well, seeing none then, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Nay.
No.
Motion defeated.
Chairman, I want a division on that.
Okay, division has been requested. All those in favor of the amendment signify by raising your hand. And no? Okay, 7 ayes and 15 no. So much,
Mr. Chair, your hearing's pretty good.
Well, I put in a new battery. That was probably the... while we were debating it, I had to...
So members...
it is noticeable sometimes when I...
Mr. Chair and members...
...technology operating.
The fiscal impact, which is why we're here on this bill, is basically in Section 6 and Section 7 of the bill. There are $22 million is going from the general fund cost to pay for the merger of the Duluth teachers into the TRA, and $7 million is going to pay for the sustainability of the St. Paul Teachers Fund. And just a little side note, there was a study we did last year. We had them do the what the costs were, and this is what the costs came down on this, and whether it was feasible to do this or it was better to do this or leave them separate. The study came back. If we had did both of them come in, we were looking at, instead of $7 million a year for St. Paul Teachers, we were looking at having to come up with $46 million a year for St. Paul Teachers to come in. So it's right now it's cost benefit to leave them on their own and help shore them up. Now these subsidies will go till there's a time certain date, and but it also, if the funds get to the sustainability levels, these payments drop off. There's another piece in the bill, section 3 of the bill, where we're increasing the employer and the employee by 0.5% each payment into the funds. And that's part of the Sustainability Act that we passed in 2010, that if in a two-year period prior to it, that the actuarial study says that they're not sustainable, there's a deficiency in the contributions, that they have to be raised, and that's why we're raising them for the MSRS and the PARA. So that's effective current law, and the funds, I mean, the employers for PARA and the employers for MSRS have said that they will eat that cost, that they built that into their budget that we passed last year. With that, members, that's the parts of the bill that bring it here. I can stand for questions.
Okay, there any questions of Representative Nelson? Representative Abler.
Oh, didn't realize I was first. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. Last year's bill had some reforms. I think was that last year the troopers were going to take a little cut in some of their monthly, and there's some increased donations from various groups. And if that bill wouldn't have passed, we wouldn't have saved $500 million, I think, something like that. I think Representative Murphy kind of made that point kind of clear on the floor. Can you, maybe Representative Murphy, I'll ask you if you would answer. On this bill, if this bill doesn't pass, are the pensions going to cost more, or are they going to cost less?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, would you state the question, if this bill doesn't pass?
Right. Last year, if the bill wouldn't have passed, pensions would have cost more in Minnesota. And because there were some reforms and increased and all the convoluted things mm-hmm. that I've escaped understanding all the way, so I stay off of that commission. but the interactions made it save, I think, $500 million over a period of time, and it made it a good kind of a reformish kind of a bill. And is there anything like that in this? And so if that bill wouldn't have passed, we wouldn't have saved $500 million.
Right.
If this bill passes, are we going to spend more money or less money?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, thank you for bringing that topic up. The 2010 bill that we passed towards sustainability saved the state $6 billion. And this, and then last year was half, and this one is providing sustainability in the future because of the things that Representative Nelson mentioned with the increased employer costs. The employer costs on for PERA, some PERA plan, the general, is the lowest in the country, and we're going to bring that up in a staggered way. And so we will have more sustainability in the plans, plus the benefits will be there for the retirees when they do retire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then this is a takeover of the Duluth plan. If we didn't do that, would it fail soon or would it fail later?
Well,
if we didn't do this bill, what happens then?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, Duluth was fully funded before the crash, before 2008. They were fully funded. But since that time, with the crash of 2007, things have changed. The demographics are changing. Right now, there are 1,512 contributing teachers. And 1995, there were 1,512 contributing teachers and 841 retirees. Today, in 2014, there are 800 contributing teachers and 1,500 retirees in the pension plan. So it's just been a complete switch around. Plus, the population in Duluth has not changed significantly for decades. And the number of students in ISD 709 has gone down from 14,000 in 1993 to 8,300 in 2014. Plus, during that time, 250 teachers were taken out of the Duluth Teachers Retirement Plan through legislative action. Legislative action took the teachers at the vocational school out, or the Duluth Lake Superior Community College out, and put them in TRA. The legislative action also said that all charter schools teachers had to go into TRA. And so the combined numbers of those teachers total 250. And so the demographics aren't going to get any better.
Thank you. And one more question, Mr. Chair.
Representative Aber.
You know, I might actually like to be on the Pensions Commission. This is all math, you know, and healthcare is math and pensions is math, but I still don't want to be on it, so please nobody nominate me. Just a final question. I don't know how I'm going to vote on this. I've voted for every other pension bill because I thought we needed to keep our promises to people. And this one, I'm just trying to figure it out. And so on the Duluth package in particular, how does that compare with the average TRA package in terms of benefits and inflation and so on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Abler, Duluth is the only only pension plan where there's been no COLA for 2 years and going on three.
Is that right?
And but they will be brought up when they come into TRA, if the consolidation takes place, they will be on the same as TRA.
And just one more comment, Mr. Chair. And so it's like I think this. We did some reform in the St. Paul one when that was merged. And I think they had some pretty good COLAs going at the time, and so they had to bring those down. So just it would be helpful for people to know that there's been no COLA for 2 years and they're not getting big increases. So that's helpful. Thank you.
And, Mr. Chair, just a correction. When we brought the Minneapolis teachers in, not the St. Paul teachers. The St. Paul teachers are still separate.
Oh, sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You know, and I'm assuming that when Representative Murphy mentions that the technical college was taken out of the Duluth plan. That happened in the cities of the first class, where uniquely they had their own pension plans. And then when we merged into what we now call MNSCU, the rest of the tech colleges around the state were already a part of TRA. But the cities of the first class had their own pension plans, and I'm assuming that was part of the driving force then that you're referring to when you say legislative decision in terms
right.
of the number of people contributing to the plan.
And Mr. Chair, yeah. I would like to also mention that historically the plans that are in existence now have taken in 60 independent plans like the Duluth Teachers or like the Duluth Police or like Minneapolis Police and Fire kind of things, whatever the three big plans, TRA, MSRS, PERA, have all consolidated smaller plans into the larger over the years of the Pension Commission. Historically, it's the right thing to do.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Kahn.
Well, just let me point out, in 2010, the legislature passed a major benefit reduction plan that was signed by Governor Pawlenty. And Tom Hansen, who was a former House employee and the Commissioner of Finance, said that that pension bill saved the state's credit rating. Right now, we're rated extremely high by the three major credit ratings systems. If you look like a National Association of Retirement issue brief, I know it's so difficult to bring facts into this, but the Minnesota is right in the middle, spending about their contribution to pensions as a percentage of all state and local spending is 1.62 in Minnesota, and we're right in the middle of what the U.S. weighted average is, 2.77. So we're doing very well, and we've really had cooperation from the plans when we've needed, and this is a good bill, and we should pass it. Could have been better, but it's still good.
Okay, any further discussion? Representative Detmer.
Yeah, I'd like to have TRA, you know, representative come down here and just kind of explain to us, you know, what will happen if this doesn't pass, or what's the future look like for these three retirement programs, the TRA, the Minneapolis, and the St. Paul.
I think Mr. Thompson is still, he's still here. Mr. Thompson?
And then, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know that there's two of you, whichever one wants to take that question. Mr. Thompson?
Chairman, Luther Thompson from TRA. I'll let Mr. Jay Soffel speak on the Duluth issue.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is Jay Stoffel, and just to be clear, I want to explain that for 22 years, I was the director of the Duluth plan, and as of January 6th, I became the deputy director of the Teachers Retirement Association. So I'm here to help the committee understand what you need, what you would like to know about the Duluth plan, although I'm not with the plan any longer. Dave Johnson behind me also represents the Duluth plan and can speak to the board position and so forth, but if you would like historical information or financial information about the Duluth plan, I can help the committee with that, knowing that I am a TRA employee.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question was, you know, all three of these plans are looking at some unfunded liability that we have here, and I'd just like to get a picture. You know, we went through some hard times, and I know TRA did, and they're bringing things back up. We're about 71, almost 72% funded. What's the long-term progress here that we're making here on these retirements?
Mr. Thompson.
Chairman, Representative. Well, I think TRA is making progress, particularly since the 2010 pension reform bill. We're about 80% funded. And I would say that this is a very timely issue to consolidate Duluth. Because of their demographic situation, it's just not the economy and not the market. Duluth will be in a similar situation to what Murph was and Minneapolis was if we don't take action. It clearly will become more expensive if this bill does not pass today.
Okay. Any other questions? Well, seeing none, then the chair renews my motion that House File 1951, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
I want to make a comment, which I remind people in every committee this vote goes through. Before I was the chairman of the Government Operations Committee, one of the major House reforms I made was that we would have an omnibus pension bill. If that had, and I insisted on it, and the Senate found that when you do multiple bills and someone has one bill, you end up doing one bill. If I had not done that, count the number of bills we would be going through on this committee. We had 32 separate bills, all of them subject to amendment, discussion, and so forth. So,
I'll Representative Kahn, as the chair of this committee, I thank you for pointing that out. We'd be here
I just have to point it out each time it happens.
Well, thank you, Representative Nelson, Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We will now go to Representative Newton, special license veterans, special women's veterans license plate. Welcome back to the committee. We were here the other day.
Thank you, Mr.
Representative
Chair.
Representative Newton, I'll move that House File 1916, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. And now there is an amendment. Do you want to take the amendment before or after you explain the bill?
Mr. Chair, let me please do the amendment first.
You want to do the amendment first?
Please.
Okay. So the chair moves the A3 amendment and if you could explain the amendment.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. What the amendment does is it adds motorcycles to the license plates, so we have them for vehicles, motor vehicles, including motorcycles. And it also essentially brings the bill in line with the Senate version of the bill. It's primarily a technical change. And it eliminates a surcharge that we had on there for a special women's fund that was going to be monitored by MDVA.
Okay, any discussion on the amendment? Okay, seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion carried. Representative Newton on the bill.
Mr. Chair, thank you. The bill is very basic. It provides a license plate for women veterans. I think many people don't realize that we have 29,000 women veterans in Minnesota, and that the military force for the United States, including Minnesota, is now made up of 15% women. It has changed dramatically from the days that Representative Ron Earhart and I had served, when we had maybe 3 to 5% of the force was made up of women. You find them in every profession in the military now, including fighter pilots and on the line. So with that, we're looking for some equity for our women veterans. I do have two women veterans here to testify very briefly, if you would like to hear from them. With your permission, Mr. Chair, it would be very brief.
Okay, we generally don't take testimony, okay. But if they're here, if it's very brief, we'll do that.
Yes, I would like to ask them to come forward. I have
I should explain that we generally rely on the testimony taking place in the other committees and have the opportunity for questions from citizens, but or to be posed. But if they would like to testify, that'll be just fine.
Okay, I just want to highlight the level of quality of female veterans that we have.
You're welcome, and if you could identify yourself for the record. Everything we do here is taped. So,
good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Jill Troutner. I live in Maple Grove, and I grew up on White Earth Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota. And when I was a high school senior, I was nominated by the late Congressman Arlen Stanglin to attend West Point, and I graduated with the class of 1993, Defenders of the Free. I served in Germany with the Forward Support Battalion, and I competed as a soldier athlete with USA Biathlon and with military biathlon all across the world. I made my way home, and I served with the Red Bull Division as a company commander, and I deployed with the Red Bull Division, as so many of our guardsmen do here in Minnesota. Looking at myself and my fellow women veterans, you wouldn't know we had served. There's nothing to visibly distinguish us from the rest of our fellow citizens. As Representative Newton said, I was shocked when I heard that over 29,000 Minnesota women are veterans. I don't see them. My brother made the comment that they're like looking for unicorns. Well, we are invisible, and we need to become a little more visible. So for many of these veteran women, having the license plate is a long overdue acknowledgement of their service, and it's something visual that can't be mistaken for anyone's service but their own. Everyone notices a veteran's plate, and everyone assumes that plate belongs to a man. For me, this license plate is a statement of value, that Minnesota, my state, values my service, my patriotism, and my sacrifices in a highly visible way, and that that all of us, are veterans.
Well, Ken, welcome as well, and if you could identify yourself for the record.
Yes. Mr. Chair, my name is Trista Mattis Castillo. I'm also a veteran who served 16 years on active duty in the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Minnesota Army National Guard as a company commander. And I'm here for any questions. I'll just hold there for now, because I know many of the members of the committee have heard us testify before, but I'm here for questions if needed.
Okay. Are there any questions? Representative Nornes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Newman, I was just interested. Has the plate been designed? I'm just curious what it might look like and how clearly it's distinguished that it is honoring the female veterans.
Mr. Chair and Representative Ornis, it hasn't been designed. It'll be designed by MDVA.
Okay.
And basically what it is at the bottom of the plate, it'll say woman veteran.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions of either the two veterans or Representative Newton. Well, seeing none, then the chair renews his motion where House File 1916, the second engrossment as amended, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Any further discussion? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries, and thank you for your comments, and thank you, Representative Newton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, we'll now go to Representative Sawatsky's DOT technical bill, Department of Transportation. She nod. Is Representative Bernardi? We'll drop down to Representative Bernardi then while we find Representative Sawatsky. This is, I think we can call this one of the on-session bills. Is that correct?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Forgot to bring my can of 7-Up with me today for our on-session bill today for transportation. It was supposed to be a joke, but I guess it wasn't that funny. But anyway,
I thought you meant for all the committee. but then maybe it's, well, it's getting close. It's not coffee time.
Right.
Yet,
good, there you go.
We're over.
Okay. So I brought Mr. Radin with us today, and this bill is non-controversial with what is in it. It repeals a lot of things, eliminates obsolete language, reports. It eliminates some things that cost more money than they are worth doing, and it inadvertent, for example, one report they inadvertently did for a number of years and no one noticed that it was gone, so it seems like it's not probably a necessary report. So anyway, there's a number of things we can talk to you about if you have an interest in them, and like I said, Mr. Radin is here to comment as well.
Okay, and I will move that House File 3084, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. So are there, did you want to make to the desk?
Mr. Chair, Eric
normally Radin. We would just take questions, but.
Sure, Eric Radin, MnDOT Government Affairs, and Mr. Chair, I would just point out that the fiscal note shows the savings to the state and also to local governments by eliminating some of these reporting requirements.
Okay, any questions or discussion? Okay, well, seeing none, I renew my motion that House File 3084, the first engrossment, be recommended to be placed in the general register. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Thank you.
let's see. I was about to take Representative Mahoney. Now that Representative Sawatsky's here, we'll move back to that bill. That's House File 2214. And the chair moves that House File 2214, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general register. Representative Sawatsky, if you could explain the bill.
Okay. Good morning, Chair, Mr. Chair, and members. Thank you. I've been ran from the basement. So, this is a transportation bill. It's a housekeeping on-session bill, and I believe that the part that we are referring to is the $6,000 that is being requested for an extension of the Non-Motorized Transportation Advisory Committee, which was set to expire this year, and then to extend it for 4 years. This money isn't for the department for reimbursement, but for those that are on the committee to be reimbursed for their being on the committee and expenses for this committee.
Okay, and by the way, when you reference the funding, Mr. Marks, if you could just comment quickly, it's not from the general fund, it's the Trunk Highway Fund, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It's the Trunk Highway Fund that would have to absorb that additional $6,000.
Okay, is there any discussion? Well, seeing none, and the chair renews his motion that House File 2014, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the general registrar. Seeing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion carried.
Thank you.
Now we will, and Representative Garofalo's on his way. Representative Mahoney, why don't you take your bill then while we're waiting for Representative Garofalo?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I would like to move that House File 2384 be referred to the General Register.
Okay, and the motion is before us. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I can explain
it. Your goal is to?
It's a bill that needs to sit on the House floor in case of a question. Essentially, what this does is that it extends the ability for the Courage Center to continue to do vocational rehabilitation, because in state law there is a law that says that you have to be a primary, your primary purpose has to be vocational rehabilitation. When Alina bought the Courage Center, Alina is primarily a healthcare provider. We are extending it 1 year as we work out the Olmstead court decision to see if, and that's probably when the law will change.
Okay, and as explained at this time of the session, we sometimes have a vehicle bill, so you're going for a drive.
I would never have called it a vehicle bill, sir.
I just did. And I've had a few of those myself. Okay, any discussion on the bill? Seeing none, then all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Representative Garofalo in the room yet?
We do.
He's on his way. Okay, so we'll just wait a moment. Okay, maybe Ms. Conley just reminded me we have somebody from the department here. Why don't we...
incoming.
Oh, here he is. Okay. Representative Garofalo, your bill is before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Did you move my bill already?
Not yet.
If
but
you could
I
move.
Will move your bill. I'm just, let's see, what is the House File? House File 284. The Chair recommends that House File 284, or 2884. Be recommended to be placed on the General Register. Representative Garofalo, if you could explain the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Very quickly, this is one of the few bills you can have where everybody wins. There are no losers. What this bill does is it sets up an investor-owned utilities to offer a new tariff for electric-owned vehicles. The reason why this saves everybody money is that right now, if people come home from work and they plug in their electric vehicle at 5 or 6 o'clock, particularly during the summer, they're going to be paying very high rates in the wholesale market. Now, that customer doesn't pay those costs. Those costs are distributed to all of us. All of us pay higher rates. What this does is it sets it up. It's voluntary for the consumer. Well, they could plug that car in at night. A separate meter would only run during off-peak hours. The wholesale market is purchased at a much lower rate. The customer pays a lower rate. More importantly, all of us who do not own electrical vehicles, we benefit from those savings because we don't have those costs shifted onto us. And so as electric vehicles become more prevalent in our society, it's going to save us a lot of money. And just as a equivalency for everybody to know that an electric vehicle is basically like adding a small house to the grid. And so it's a really good bill. It saves everybody money. And I think it's here because the Commerce Department had a very minor fiscal note, which I've been advised they've stated they can absorb. And that's my presentation, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, any discussion on the bill? Okay, seeing none then, the Chair removes this motion that House File 2884, the second engrossment, be recommended to be placed on the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you, Representative. Yeah, and by the way, couple of announcements from Ms. Conley as far as tomorrow is concerned.
Very briefly, we meet at 8:30 tomorrow.
So an earlier start that's driven by floor session, I think, starts at 10. Mm-hmm. So and we have a number of bills that we need to process, so a little earlier start than usual. With that, meeting adjourned.